This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and Kate Andrews. So today it's been announced that surge testing will be happening in some parts of London to find the South African variant. Kate, can you tell us more about the situation?
So surge testing already started in South London a few days ago, and now it's moving to areas of North London as well because there's concern that there has been small breakouts still, but breakouts nonetheless, of the South African variant. And as Ross Clark writes on the blog today, it raises several questions. The first is whether or not this could actually become a dominant strain in the UK. Now, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, said a few weeks ago that it was unlikely that this would happen or that it wasn't a major concern because the Kent variant had become so dominant and it didn't seem like the South African variant was competing particularly well with it. And that said, with virus levels so low now, perhaps, you know, that there's a question mark as to whether or not the variant could get farther. But the bigger question is what this means for the vaccine rollout. And we've had some conflicting data so far about how vaccines can hold up. Pfizer and Oxford in particular, those are the ones being rolled out in the UK against the South African variant. Now, one study in particular was concerning that showed that the Oxford efficacy really quite drastically fell when it was tested on the South African variant. But these data samples haven't been very big, and some around Pfizer have been really positive, others around Oxford have been more negative. The crucial thing is that we do not yet have data or evidence that suggests that any variant undermines these vaccines on the crucial elements of preventing hospitalization and death. Now, we're operating with so many unknowns, right? And the data could come in at any time, and no doubt there are bigger studies being carried out now to get more concrete results. But the key thing is that, you know, getting these vaccines still seems to protect people, like, vastly significantly more against a really severe reaction to this virus. But of course, because the UK is able, thankfully, to track and trace these variants so well, they want to do so and get it under control to be as cautious as possible.
Katie, what is feeling like in Westminster about the possibility of an overtake by the South African variant?
I think we've heard a lot about it. We've been hearing about how variants could throw up the roadmap for months. I think that actually, in a way, the South Africa variant is seen as potentially a big problem. It does make ministers a little bit nervous. But partly, I think, when we've been looking at surge testing in the past of the South African variant, you have got the sense that it's almost the government going through the motions in part. So if there is a more dangerous variant in the future, you know, if things evolve more, they have everything to go. They tried things out. And we know there has been some South African variant in the country. We also know that there has been travel and so forth. So I think ultimately we're in a situation where it's clearly a matter of time before there is more South African variant across the UK. And Neil Ferguson, who advises the government, has been quite clear on that. It is ultimately about how long you can put that off. I don't think anyone thinks it's sustainable for the UK's COVID strategy, which is to, obviously right now there are limits on travel, but it's not to be New Zealand. So if you're not going to try and go for New Zealand zero COVID, really tight border structure, then I think it's inevitable these variants are coming here. I think the fact they're so high in France means that people did realise this was going to happen. And the question now is, as Kate was touching on, is the surge testing something so it gets fairly under control? Because there's clearly a little bit of South African variant the government is comfortable of having in the country. And when it gets up to the point that you might get to the next phase of the lockdown, they say, well, it's too much, but I don't get the impression we're near that yet, really. I don't think that is an escalation that people think is about to happen.
And this has been sort of an underlying question for weeks now, because rhetoric from the Prime Minister and his officials has become quite strange in the sense that they keep talking down the vaccines. They keep saying things like, well, vaccines aren't 100% effective, as if we ever expected them to be. We did not. The vaccines we have now are better, based on the data we have right now, than most people could have dreamt up even in their wildest dreams. So the data is very positive. We don't really understand where this rhetoric is coming from. And some people are asking, you know, is this because there are other concerns? Does Downing Street have data-driven reasons to be concerned about, say, the South African variant or another variant that could potentially undermine a vaccine? Is this their attempt to keep people following the rules? Like, where is this coming from? And perhaps it is coming from variants, but I think there is a feeling that the Prime Minister just needs to level with the public about really what is driving having that desire to sort of play down the vaccines. If it is the potential of a new variant or a dangerous variant, then that should be said, rather than this very muddled game that they're playing at the moment, where obviously there's still huge encouragement to take up the vaccine, and yet they don't seem to want to credit it with all that much yet.
And meanwhile, Katie, north of the border, the Scottish Holyrood elections campaigns rumble on. How is this week's campaigning been going?
Well, we had the TV debate earlier this week, and we're also hearing various pledges. We had Nicola Sturgeon talking about how the SNP might look into a four-day week. I think in terms of where the election campaign is and who's doing well, it's still those polls from last week suggesting the SNP on course for a majority. And it's interesting, obviously, Sturgeon's proposals. I get the sense that the Scottish Tories feel are doing a little bit better this week. I think it's landing some of their lines. But at the same time, I think that the scenario which seems the most likely from the Westminster view at the moment is the SNP winning a majority. And I think that you're seeing a big push by the SNP to say, you know, really focus on us. Don't cast your vote to Alex Salmond's party, even the Greens. You know, we need all your votes. So does that hold in the sense that people think that the SNP do need that? Or do people start to think, oh, they're doing so well that if you are someone who supports independence, you could actually cast your vote to one of the other parties? I think that would be an interesting metric. But I think in terms of the UK government, we are in a situation where that response to the SNP likely winning a majority is still being worked on. And there's interesting theories going around on what Boris Johnson's strategy is. Some say, you know, it's just muddling along. But I do get the impression when you speak to unionists in Westminster about what to do in response that it's not as though the idea of an independence referendum is suddenly seen as desirable. But I think people start to see it as a bit more inevitable and perhaps not, you know, so far away.
Katie mentioned there this pilot scheme that the SNP is suggesting that they could do if they get voted into government, where they're going to set up £10 million to pilot a four-day working week. With your economics correspondent hat on, what does that do to productivity? Is that a good idea for an economy coming out of COVID?
Well, when you have seen pilots like this around the world, really, you often find that workers like it and it can even give a bit of a boost to productivity, but it's wildly expensive and usually not very affordable. I mean, we're in the giveaway phase of the election, so, you know, expect to probably hear sort of big proposals like that. Very notable that they've pledged to pilot, not to actually do it, which is basically saying we won't do it, but we'll at least indicate to you that we'd like to. Look, Nicola Sturgeon is making a real point to stress that her government would and will handle coming out of COVID differently than Boris Johnson's government. She wants the Tory party in Westminster to be seen as the party of austerity. Now, I'm not sure if you actually look at the facts and the stats that's ever going to add up, given how much money they're spending and how little appetite there is, especially from the Prime Minister, to cut any spending. But is the narrative that she wants to craft. So policies like a four-day working week fit really well into that. You know, Scotland will be more generous and England won't be. The reality is, you know, if Scotland were to go independent, would they have any money to do that? When you look at their deficit to GDP ratio, if you look at the state of their finances, long before COVID, they were far worse than the UK government's overall state of their finances. But is that argument particularly persuasive at the moment? I think Katie has done an excellent job over the past few months highlighting that, you know, there's no reason to think that those economic arguments are really going to sway hearts and minds if we were to go into a second referendum. Put aside whether or not you think the fear-mongering around Brexit and the economic arguments were right or wrong, you know, regardless of which side you fall on, that wasn't really what swayed hearts and minds. It came down to sovereignty. So I'm not sure pledges like this are really going to make or break independence either way. It's just the phase that we're naturally in this stage of the election.
And of course, Jeremy Corbyn made it one of his pledges when he was running last year.
What didn't he pledge? I mean, everything was on the table. And I think a lot of voters can see through that. And I don't think this election is about the four-day working week.
And Katie, finally, in the latest development on the Greensill saga, Eric Pickles has emerged as an unlikely hero for those who think that lobbying is a bit too shady.
Yes, he's been giving evidence this morning to MPs, and Lord Pickles, Eric Pickles, said that the rules on ministers and top officials taking jobs of private firms need urgent reform. And I think what I think is going to be really interesting is what happened yesterday was after we heard about Bill Crothers, the civil servant who managed to work for both the Cabinet Office and Greensill at the same time. You had his reply was that this was not an uncommon practice. Now, Simon Case, the top civil servant, has now written to permanent secretaries and said, ultimately, you have your orders. Go and find out if there are any civil servants who are doing these multi-conflict of interest jobs and let us know ASAP. And I think it would be very surprising if that was a common feature. But yet, at the same time, the whole thing has been quite surprising. The fact that you had one civil servant who was able to do this is surprising. So I think that will tell us whether this is going to be a scandal which is very much framed as a Tory scandal, Tory sleaze, or this is going to be a scandal which is much more institutional. Because if this is something which is deep in the civil service, or affects several of those, and then I think it starts to, yes, it's damaging to, I suppose, the perception of Westminster and politics, but I think at that point it probably stops being such a party-specific problem. Yes, you can, Keir Starmer can still talk about Tory sleaze, but you start to think, well, this is actually going to come for pretty much everyone in Westminster.
Katie and Kate, thanks very much, and do join us again for our next episode.